Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas Page, Fort Worth Knights.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
This is an outrageous and terrible abuse. Of course kids are resilient and God is gracious and God can work despite the terrible things we do to one another. But divorce is absolutely devastating to children.
It's not just that Jesus lays down his life for those who are innocent victims of senseless violence. It's that Jesus lays down his life for those who actively hated him.
Colorado trumpet players love Issues Etc.
One of the strangest processions I have ever seen. It was footage that is making the rounds in social media. A procession out of a church in San Francisco on the occasion of the Global Climate Action Summit that was held there, well, just very recently, in the last couple of days. The procession was not of scientists. It was not of climate change activists or global warming researchers. No, it was of clergy people of every stripe. And in and amongst the clergy people were, well, trees, not trees like that grow out in your yard, but people dressed as trees up on stilts, processing silently out with the interfaith clergy. It was very strange to see. I've seen some strange things in churches. That has to be one of the strangest. I'm not sure what that was about, but I do wonder if progressivism and the climate change advocates are all about the hard science of the thing, why are they holding interfaith services and faith-based workshops at the Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, September the 18th. We're going to be talking with Cal Beisner about the interfaith service and the faith-based workshops at this recent global climate conference in San Francisco. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will be teaching us a Sunday school lesson on Joseph feeding not only Egypt, but the entire world in Genesis chapters 40 and 41. And then in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., our series on pastors and lay people continue. Today, we're going to talk about family members would like to offer eulogies during a funeral service. What is a pastor to do? Pastor Larry Peters and Pastor Ben Ball will be our guest. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about an interfaith service and faith-based workshops at a recent global climate conference in San Francisco, Dr. Cal Beisner, founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Dr. Beisner, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks very much, Todd.
Progressivism, and in particular, the advocates of climate change, they want a reputation or have a reputation of being very pro-science, very pro-hard science. If that's the case, then why would a global climate summit include interfaith services and faith-based workshops?
Well, I don't think we should really think it's all that surprising. Quite simply, religious faith is one of the major motivations for human beings all over this world. And people who want to achieve various different social goals recognize that it can be very helpful to enlist people of religious faith in the pursuit of those goals. Sometimes those goals are obviously in line with particular religious faith. For example, the opposition to abortion is obviously in line with a Bible that includes the commandment, you shall not murder. And so people of strong religious faith can be strongly motivated to oppose abortion and seek to protect unborn human life. Similarly, some people think that protecting the environment is a major issue for religious faith, and frankly, I do. Founded the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation for the very purpose of enlisting evangelical Christians in efforts to promote what we call biblical earth stewardship, or working together to enhance the fruitfulness, the beauty, and the safety of the earth to the glory of God and the benefit of our fellow humans. But when it comes to the climate change issue, what we see is a great deal of very faulty science being paraded around, and then religious people being enlisted to support these faulty scientific claims. And partly that is happening because the agendas pursued to combat global warming line up really well with progressives' belief in a very expansive vision of government, of the role of the state, state control over much of our lives, especially in the economic sphere. To fight global warming, we're being told that we have to have a complete changeover of the energy systems that power the world's economies. And California has announced that it intends to get 100% of its energy from renewable sources, none at all from fossil fuels, by the year 2050. That thing is simply not going to happen. What it will do is import a great deal of energy from other states where it gets generated mostly from fossil fuels or nuclear. But progressives like George Soros have found it very convenient to fund religious activities in favor of global warming alarmism. And so he funds, for example, Interfaith Power and Light and the Evangelical Environmental Network.
Can you explain two things that you just discussed there? First of all, if you would, the aligning of kind of the political with the environmental agenda. You said that there is a coincidence of kind of heavy government intrusion into people's lives and the agenda of the global warming or climate change advocacy. Yeah. Is that simply just so happened to be a coincidence, or is there something about one or the other that makes them natural allies?
Well, I do think that both historically and theoretically, they're natural allies. Historically, a great many activists in the global socialist or communist movement by the 1970s and early 1980s had recognized that communism was losing the competition with capitalism in terms of the question, which system produces more wealth and gets it to more people? And so many of them abandoned the direct support of communism or socialism and instead jumped on the environmentalist bandwagon because they recognized that government regulation of the environment allowed a means of pursuing their vision of the state as something that ought to organize all of human life without having to debate over whether communism could lift people out of poverty or not. And the answer, of course, has been clearly not. So historically, that's one reason why environmentalism has been so friendly to socialist thought. But the other reason is that the very meaning of the word environment comes from a French word meaning surroundings, is expansivist. I mean, I can't think of anything that isn't part of my surroundings, you know, from the hair on the back of my head to Alpha Centauri. And if you have an environmentalist understanding of the role of government, then government's going to control a great deal. And since we use energy for absolutely everything we do, producing food, clothing, shelter, transportation, communication, healthcare, education, everything else. Everything depends on energy. If you can come up with a rationale for government to control the production and distribution of energy, then essentially you've come up with a rationale for government to control every aspect of life. And that's exactly what a number of environmentalist leaders figured out in the 1980s and realized, aha, since carbon dioxide is emitted by the burning of fossil fuels, and fossil fuels provide about 85% of all the energy used in the world, and that is still so today, by the way, therefore, if we can persuade people that carbon dioxide is going to cause some sort of catastrophe, then we can persuade them to give government control over all energy production and distribution, and that's exactly what they're pursuing.
Okay, the other thing I wanted you to address there was that California law you had mentioned that was recently signed by Governor Brown in California that would require the state, as you said, to get all its power from renewable sources by 2045. What is the definition of renewable sources?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. It typically excludes hydropower, that is the generation of electricity from turbines in dams on rivers, precisely because most environmentalists don't like dams on rivers. They would prefer wild-run rivers. That's an aesthetic preference on their part. No problem with that, as long as they recognize and admit that it's an aesthetic preference and other people have a different one. But generally, renewables tend to point to things like wind, solar, biofuels, and geothermal. Now, for all practical purposes, geothermal and biofuels are so limited in terms of their magnitude that they'll never play a huge part. Wind and solar are the primary things that are being promoted, and by the way, they have enormous financial backing from industries invested in them, and they've received huge government subsidies as well, many times over the subsidies to any kind of fossil fuels in terms of dollars per gigawatt hour of electricity produced or anything of that sort. So wind and solar, and the problem with those is that they are intermittent. It's not always windy. It's not always sunny. And they're much more expensive per gigawatt for producing electricity than coal or natural gas, or most importantly, over the longer term, nuclear, which can be cheaper, safer, and far cleaner than any one of those.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Why is nuclear not on the list of renewables? Because it is, especially being compared to fossil fuels, it has many, many advantages.
Oh, yes, it certainly does. I think there are a couple of reasons why. One is that a lot of environmentalists are basically anti-human, and they recognize that human population can be constrained in part by prolonged poverty and by lack of access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy. But nuclear promises exactly that access. Paul Ehrlich, the author of the famous book, The Population Bomb, said that allowing the spread of nuclear energy is like giving some sort of very dangerous toy to a little child. I've forgotten now which toy he mentioned at the time. But nuclear energy has tremendous potential to lift more and more societies out of poverty and keep them out of poverty. And there is, in fact, a group of environmentalists who are very pro-nuclear. It's called, in the United States, it's called Environmentalists for Nuclear USA, headed up by my friend John Shanahan.
We're talking with Dr. Cal Beisner about interfaith services and faith-based workshops at a recent global climate conference in San Francisco. He is founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's also author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the notion of getting all your energy from renewable sources. It sounds like Cal thinks that's not even possible.
No one wants his or her life to end meaninglessly, and that is certainly what happens if there is no life after death or final judgment.
International human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Religions other than Christianity provide no assurance in this regard. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is at the very heart of Christianity, and is the most compelling reason to believe the claims of Christ to be God come to earth for the salvation of mankind. The evidence for the resurrection is so powerful that it would stand up in any court of law.
You can meet and hear Dr. John Warwick Montgomery making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about an interfaith service and faith-based workshops at a recent global climate conference in San Francisco. Dr. Cal Beisner is our guest. Picking up where we left off there, Cal, you were discussing that California law that would require that state to get all of its power from renewable sources by 2045. And you said earlier that probably would mean just simply importing energy from other states where the energy is being produced through the use of fossil fuels.
Yeah, there are a number of different reasons why that's so. The most important is simply that that wind and solar, because they are by nature inherently intermittent, and because they are very, very low density as energy sources, are always going to be very costly and unreliable. And so in order to have a stable electric grid, you have to have absolutely reliable, predictable, instant-on-demand power in that grid all the time, regardless how much the input from wind or solar might rise or fall at any given moment. That means wind and solar always have to be backed up by fossil fuel plants, coal or natural gas, basically, running at what's called spinning reserve, which can be ramped up or down instantly as the need requires. Now, one other way to think of this is how much land is needed to provide the power needed. One study, and I think a very good one, calculated that it would take about 300 acres for a typical power plant, a coal-fired power plant, to provide enough electricity for 300,000 people. Now, New York City, at about 8.1 million people, would require about, I've forgotten the multiple now, but would require more than that. So what would it take for New York City for wind? Well, in order to provide enough power for the 300,000 from wind turbines alone, it'd take not 300 acres, but 55 square miles. Now let's think about New York City at 8.1 million residents. The result of that is that instead of 55 square miles for 300,000 people, you'd need 148,500 square miles of wind turbines to provide all the electricity for New York City. California has a great deal more than 8.1 million people. You'd have to have an awful lot of wind turbines all over the state to provide that. And it's a very poor use of land. And it's really shocking to me that environmentalists would be so much in favor of it because they want the beauty of nature. I have seen few things more ugly than the vast wind factories, and it's very unfortunate that some people have been hoodwinked into calling them wind farms. They're not farms, they're factories.
So let's talk about the attempt to kind of co-opt a moral voice here where we began our conversation. And it seems to me that's part of the purpose of having interfaith services here to give at least maybe the photo op. And I don't know if you saw the footage of the processional outside the interfaith service that they had, Dr. Beisner, but it was kind of funny, actually, to see people dressed up as trees walking on stilts, exiting a church among various clergymen. But I think they were taking it very seriously. I'd like your response to this. This is a quote from the Religion News Service story on the interfaith services. Every major faith tradition calls us to care for the earth. Every major faith tradition calls us to care for our neighbors and those who are most vulnerable. And climate change impacts both of those. That's a pretty neutral statement, but it sounds as though there's a lot being assumed.
Yeah, there's a whole lot being assumed. The most important thing is that the phrase climate change there is actually a sort of a euphemism for something much bigger. What's actually meant by that is catastrophic, anthropogenic, global warming. Not just climate change, because climate changes all the time. Not just warming, because the globe has warmed and cooled repeatedly all through its history, but human-induced anthropogenic global warming and catastrophic global warming. And the science behind that idea is just horrifically poor. The Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation is just about to release a new book by Dr. Roy Spencer, who is one of the world's probably half dozen top climatologists, called Global Warming Skepticism for Busy People, a brief and fairly simple book on the subject. But he explains that the best scientific research indicates that human contribution to global warming is tiny, benign, and certainly not something that we would want to spend trillions of dollars trying to reduce, which is what the Paris Climate Accord, which was supported by the marchers in San Francisco, would do. It would cost approximately $70 to $140 trillion by the end of this century, and the result of full compliance would be to reduce global average temperature by a measly 17 hundredths of 1 degree Celsius. That's just absurd. But their attempt to put a moral sheen on this, I think, is really incredibly confused, if not indeed just simply dishonest. The simple fact is this, that poverty is a far greater risk to human health and longevity than anything related to climate. But the cost of trying to fight a human-induced climate change would be extremely high. And that cost could instead be put into providing purified drinking water, nutrition supplements, sewage sanitation, infectious disease control, electrification for houses that currently have no light and heat, all sorts of things like that, that would do far more good for the poor around this world. This is why the Cornwall Alliance has released a series of papers that include as parts of their title a call to truth, prudence, and protection of the poor. We think that the best scientific and economic analysis indicates that what these folks want is actually the exact opposite of what the poor of the world need.
And even if they don't know it, it sounds like from what you have said so far in our conversation, if they were able to impose upon greater numbers of people than simply the residents of California, these unrealistic expectations about where the energy is coming from and how it's going to be produced, it will mean economic disaster for people who already are not enjoying a standard of living anything near what we have here in the West.
That is absolutely correct. You know, the average sub-Saharan African woman spends 6 to 8 hours a day doing nothing but gathering wood and dried dung, which are her primary energy source. She carries that, you know, that's her transmission mechanism. She carries that for miles from where she finds it to her little hut. She burns it outside or inside, and the smoke from that, according to the World Health Organization, kills 2 to 4 million people a year, mostly women and young children. And that's the primitive energy system with which about 2 billion people in the world still live today. If we're going to prevent their using fossil fuels, coal and natural gas and oil, as their means of generating electricity, to replace that filthy, you know, wood and dried dung as their primary cooking and heating fuel, then we are condemning them to more generations of disease and premature death. That, I think, is morally unconscionable. That's why the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, including our whole network of nearly 70 scholars, including some of the world's top climate scientists, have opposed that kind of thing and have put a lot of educational materials on it at cornwallalliance.org.
Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's also author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. You can purchase this book and learn more about the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Beisner, thank you again for your time.
Todd, thank you very much. The Lord bless your work.
On the other side of the break, it's time to be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel. We'll be in Genesis chapters 40 and 41 in the middle of the Joseph story. Joseph is in prison, and yet in the midst of prison, he is able to help two of Pharaoh's servants, one of whom meets with an untimely death, the other of whom is elevated but forgets Joseph. Eventually, this leads him into Pharaoh's court. We'll tell the story of Joseph feeding Egypt and the world after this.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
You can't do it all. You're just not strong enough, smart enough, organized enough, driven enough. You're not enough, and you hate it. If this sounds like your life, check out the September edition of The Lutheran Witness. Join Jonathan Fisk, Brian Katchelmeyer, and others as you learn to think more deeply about time and your own human limitations. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky, and St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.